Welcome to Three Tales of Christmas. We're listening to the men's a cappella group called Cantus from their Christmas 2017 concert here at the Lead Center at the University of Kansas.
$1.87. That was all. And 60 cents of it was in pennies. Pennies saved one and two at a time by bulldozing the grocer and the vegetable man and the butcher until one's cheeks burned with the silent imputation of parsimony that such close dealing implied. Three times Della counted it. $1.87. And the next day would be Christmas.
gives to the manger, I'm told, Mary was humbled to see. Shepherds and kings here on bended knee, silver and gold, silver and gold, filling the world with their light. Silver and gold, how they shimmer on every Christmas night.
There was clearly nothing to do but flop down on the shabby little couch and howl. So Della did it, which instigates the moral reflection that life is made up of sobs, sniffles, and smiles, with sniffles predominating. Della finished her cry and attended to her cheeks with the powder rag. She stood by the window and looked out dully at a gray cat walking a gray fence in a gray backyard. Tomorrow would be Christmas Day, and she had only $1.87 with which to buy Jim a present. She had been saving every penny she could for months, with this result. $20 a week doesn't go far. Expenses had been greater than she had calculated. They always are. Only $1.87 to buy a present for Jim, her Jim. Many a happy hour she had spent planning for something nice for him. Something fine and rare and sterling. Something just a little bit near to being worthy of the honor of being owned by Jim. Suddenly, she whirled from the window and stood before the glass. Her eyes were shining brilliantly, but her face had lost its color within 20 seconds. Rapidly, she pulled down her hair and let it fall to its full length. Now, there were two possessions of the James Dillingham Youngs in which they both took a mighty pride. One was Jim's gold watch that had been his father's and his grandfather's. The other was Della's hair. Had the Queen of Sheba lived in the flat across the air shaft, Della would have let her hair hang out the window someday to dry, just to depreciate Her Majesty's jewels and gifts. Had King Solomon been the janitor with all his treasures piled up in the basement, Jim would have pulled out his watch every time he passed, just to see him pluck at his beard from envy. So now Della's beautiful hair fell about her, rippling and shining like a cascade of brown waters. It reached below her knee and made itself almost a garment for her. And then she did it up again, nervously and quickly. Once she faltered for a minute and stood still while a tear or two splashed on the worn red carpet. On went her old brown jacket. On went her old brown hat. With a whirl of skirts and with the brilliant sparkle still in her eyes, she fluttered out the door and down the stairs to the street.
Where she stopped, the sign read, Madame Sofrenier, hair goods of all kinds. One flight up, Della ran and collected herself, panting. Madame, large, too white, chilly, hardly looked the Sofrenier. Will you buy my hair? Asked Della. Down rippled the brown cascade. $20, said Madame, lifting the mass with a practiced hand. Oh, and the next 2 hours tripped by on rosy wings. She was ransacking the stores for Jim's present. She found it at last. It surely had been made for Jim and no one else. There was no other like it in any of the stores, and she had turned all of them inside out. It was a platinum fob chain, simple and chaste in design, properly proclaiming its value by substance alone, and not by meretricious ornamentation, as all good things should do. It was even worthy of the watch. As soon as she saw it, she knew that it must be Jim's. It was like him, quietness and value. The description applied to both. $21 they took from her for it, and she hurried home with the 87 cents. With that chain on his watch, Jim might be properly anxious about the time in any company. Grand as the watch was, he sometimes looked at it on the sly, on account of the old leather strap that he used in place of a chain. When Della reached home, her intoxication gave way a little to prudence and reason. She got out her curling irons and lighted the gas and went to work repairing the ravages made by generosity added to love, which is always a tremendous task, dear friends, a mammoth task. Within 40 minutes, her head was covered with tiny, close-lying curls that made her look wonderfully like a truant schoolboy. She looked at her reflection in the mirror long, carefully, and critically. If Jim doesn't kill me, she said to herself, before he takes a second look at me, he'll say I look like a Coney Island chorus girl. But what could I do? What could I do with $1.87?
What shall I give?
At 7 o'clock, the coffee was made and the frying pan was on the back of the stove, hot and ready to cook the chops. Suddenly, she heard his step on the stair, away down on the first flight, and she turned white for just a moment. Please God, make him think I am still pretty. The door opened and Jim stepped in and closed it. He looked thin and very serious. He needed a new overcoat and he was without gloves. Jim stopped inside the door, as immovable as a setter at the scent of a quail. His eyes were fixed upon Della, and there was an expression in them that she could not read. It terrified her. It was not anger, nor surprise, nor disapproval, nor horror, nor any of the sentiments that she had been prepared for. He simply stared at her fixedly with that peculiar expression on his face. "Jim, darling," she cried, "don't look at me that way. I had my hair cut off and sold because I couldn't have lived through Christmas without giving you a present. It'll grow out again. You won't mind, will you? I just had to do it. My hair grows awfully fast. Say Merry Christmas, Jim, and let's be happy. You don't know what a beautiful, nice gift I've got for you." "You've cut off your hair?" "Cut it off and sold it," said Della. "Don't you like me just as well anyhow? I'm me without my hair, ain't I?" "You say your hair is gone?" "You needn't look for it," said Della. "I sold, tell you. It's sold and gone, too. It's Christmas Eve, boy. Be good to me, for it went for you. Maybe the hairs of my head were numbered, but nobody could ever count my love for you. Shall I put the chops on, Jim?" Out of his trance, Jim seemed quickly to wake. He enfolded his Della. Jim drew a package from his overcoat pocket and threw it upon the table. "Don't make any mistake, Del, about me. I don't think there's anything in the way of a haircut or a shave or a shampoo that could make me like my girl any less. But if you'll unwrap that package, you may see why you had me going a while at first." White fingers and nimble tore at the string and paper, and then an ecstatic scream of joy, and then, alas, a quick change to tears. For there lay the combs. The set of combs, side and back, that Della had worshipped long in a Broadway window. Beautiful combs, pure tortoise shell with jeweled rims, just the shade to wear in the beautiful, vanished hair. They were expensive combs, she knew, and her heart had simply craved and yearned over them without the least hope of possession. And now they were hers, but the tresses that should have adorned the coveted adornments were gone. But she hugged them to her bosom, and at length she was able to look up with dim eyes and a smile and say, "My hair grows so fast, Jim." Della leaped up like a little singed cat and cried, "Oh, oh!" Jim had not yet seen his beautiful present. She held it out to him eagerly upon her open palm. The dull, precious metal seemed to flash with a reflection of her bright and ardent spirit. "Isn't it a dandy, Jim? I hunted all over town to find it. You'll have to look at the time 100 times a day now. Give me your watch. I want to see how it looks on it." Instead of obeying, Jim tumbled down on the couch and put his hands under the back of his head and smiled. "Del," he said, "let's put our Christmas presents away and keep them a while. They're too nice to use just at present. I sold the watch to get the money to buy your combs. And now suppose we put the chops on.
The Magi, as you know, were wise men, wonderfully wise men, who brought gifts to the babe in the manger. They invented the art of giving Christmas presents. Being wise, their gifts were no doubt wise ones, possibly bearing the privilege of exchange in case of duplication. And here I have lamely related to you the uneventful chronicle of two foolish children who most unwisely sacrificed for each other the greatest treasures of their house. But in a last word to the wise of these days, let it be said that of all who give gifts, these two were the wisest. Of all who give and receive gifts, such as they are wisest. Everywhere they are wisest. They are the Magi.
Said he.
Thank you very much. We really hope you enjoyed our version of Gift of the Magi by O. Henry. Now, if you've been following along, you'll remember that the title of the show is Three Tales of Christmas. We've already done two, so the last tale is coming up. We've got one more for you, but spoiler alert, it includes reindeer and stockings and a mysterious little old man who likes to break into houses in the middle of the night. Now, the legend of Santa Claus is, of course, one of the most well-known myths around the world, so much so that when almost every child gets to a certain age, they start to ask the question, so is Santa really real? If I'm not careful, I find myself asking the same question. Seriously, though, how easy is it to just chalk Santa Claus up to a nice little piece of heartwarming fiction that only serves the purpose to put a smile on a little child's face and nothing else? As an adult, what actual motivation is there for me to believe in a benevolent, gift-giving little elf? I don't know. But maybe just simply the act of believing in something magical, something fantastic, can humble you and bring a little joy and wonder to such a skeptical world. Is Santa really real? I find myself coming back to these words that were written in the New York Sun over 100 years ago. The most real things in the world are those that neither children nor adults can see. Nobody can conceive or imagine all the wonders there are unseen and unseeable in the world. You can tear apart the baby's rattle and see what makes the noise inside, but there is a veil covering the unseen world which not the strongest person, nor even the strength of all the strongest people that ever lived, could tear apart. Only faith, fancy, poetry, love, romance can push aside that curtain and view and picture the supernal beauty and glory beyond. Please enjoy our brand new version of 'Twas the Night Before Christmas.
When out on the lawn, there arose such a clatter. I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash.
The moon on the breast of the new fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below.
When, what to my wondering eye,
what to my wondering eye should appear but a miniature sleigh and eight tiny reindeer with a little driver so lively and quick.
Rapid and eagles,
his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen.
To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall.
Now dash away, dash away, dash away.
Mount
to the sky.
So
up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys and Saint Nicholas too. Prancing and pawing of each little hoof.
As I drew in my head and was turning around,
down,
St. Nicholas came with a bow. Was dressed all in fur, from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot.
A bundle of toys he had slung on his back,
and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack.
His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples so merry, his cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry.
Ooh. His droll little mouth was drawn up.
Choke when he laughed like a bowl full of jam.
was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him inside of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk and laying a finger
aside of his nose
and giving a nod
up
the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh,
to his team gave a whistle,
and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim ere he drove out of sight. Happy Christmas to
so much. We have had just an amazing time here at the Lead Center. Thank you so much to the entire crew here, Derek and Anne and Paige and Kate and so the other people that I'm so regretfully forgetting. It's just an amazing place to sing. You have such a wonderful performing arts center and such a wonderful school, and it's just an absolute pleasure to be here. We do have one more for you, but before that, I just wanted to let you know that you can please check us out online at contusings.org. Follow us on social media if you do that. There's also this great site called SoundCloud where you can search for Contus Sings and find a whole bunch of music from us. And if none of that's your style, turn the dial to good old KPR and you can hear us probably this broadcast at some point in the future. This is... we have had just a wonderful time here, so thank you so much. Thank you for buying tickets. Thank you for coming out to this, our very first Christmas concert of the year. This next song, for many of you, I'm sure, needs no introduction. Thank you so much.
Deus Domini, nuntiavit Mariae, et concepit Spiritus Sancto.
Three Tales of Christmas, featuring the 8-man a cappella vocal ensemble Cantus. From their Lead Center holiday program that KPR recorded in late November 2017. Thank you for joining us for this special Classics Live program from Kansas Public Radio. We have a new Classics Live webpage on our KPR website. Check it out for more information about Contus and about the other local concerts coming up. Wishing you a wonderful holiday season from our recording engineer Chuck Smith, our Classics Live producer Cordelia Brown, and from me, Daryl Brogdon. Broadcasts of Classics Live are a production of KPR, Kansas Public Radio. Thank you. the Kansas City Handbell Choir resound, playing a few of the carols they performed with the Kansas City Symphony in their 2017 Christmas Festival concerts. Recorded in our live performance studio on December 19, 2017. This is Classics Live from KPR, Kansas Public Radio.